Good evening and welcome to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is a regular business meeting for December 6th, 2016. The time right now is 7:01 p.m. Ms. Whitman, will you call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cuddeback, Rasmussen, Davis, and Camp.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen, please do this.
Yes.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Before we go farther in our agenda, we did have notice a few weeks ago that both Councilmember Camp and also Councilmember Gamble would not be here this evening. So unless there is objection, we'll consider them as being excused. All right. The first item that we have on the agenda this evening is public hearing. This is for AED 16-164, ordinance number 021-2016, repealing MMC 2.26 term limits for elected officials. This is up for second public hearing for first reading. And we do have people who have signed up to speak on the public hearing for term limits. The first person we have who signed up to speak is Mr. Simon Smith. Mr. Dunn. Thank you for coming.
Please state your name and address. Thank you. And I signed up for the public comment, and I did not realize you guys were expecting that fee for term limits, and I had a public comment for something else. But I do plan to keep this under 3 minutes.
Okay, so I'll have you come back up for public comment then.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. The next person who we have signed up to speak under public hearing is Ashley Sellers. Ms. Sellers, would you please come forward and state your name and address for the record? Thank you.
Ashley Sellers, 2093 Drake Mont Drive, Monroe. So I have just been listening and reading and kind of just hearing what you all have said throughout about term limits. And one thing that I have heard constantly, is just the need to hear and want to know what citizens have to say. And I guess the one thing that bothers me about that statement in relation to this is that the citizens did tell you what they had to say when they voted on term limits. I think that we have elections and we set things before our citizens for a reason. And so now to have people come up in a public hearing when you're getting a very small portion, because before what was brought up with all due respect was that a very small amount of people turned out in Monroe to vote that year based on population. But in fact, I actually do agree, funny enough, with Kurt from last week that people did show up and they did vote. And honestly, in most elections, not that many people vote. I was shocked, and I remember talking about this over a year ago, when the last election, just being so sad that somebody new to the city and trying to get involved and just see what's going on the lack of people participating in this town. But the lack of people participating in the road voting does not deserve to silence the people that do. It's my understanding that 70%-ish of people voted for this. And those are the people that turned out. And that's how our democracy in America works. You vote, you have a voice. You don't vote, you don't. And so I just find it, I guess, concerning now that we're taking such a small group of citizens and trying to be able to bring out of that. So I really would err inside of it. This is such a big issue, which I haven't heard it being brought up as an issue by citizens. I think this was an issue brought up by council. And if that's the case, then council really should take this back to the ballot. And a lot of concern over that comes to tax dollars. Well, this was already voted on, so if it's that big of an issue with council, I think you should send it back to the people that represent Monroe and represent the people that you represent, frankly. And, I did hear somebody speak on, you guys have been elected, and so therefore you should have the right to make decisions. And that's absolutely true. But when you're making decisions about something that affects you directly as term limits, I think that's when you kind of throw something back to the citizens and say, you know what, where are you guys? What do you want? This is what you said you wanted. And put it back in the hands of the people you asked in the first place. Because otherwise, continuing to say we care about Monroe's opinion and then going against it really doesn't show that to us. Thank you.
Thank you.
The next person who we have signed up to speak on the public hearing is Dave Demarest. Mr. Demarest, please come forward and see if you have any matters for record.
Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Thomas, members of council. My name is Dave Demarest. My address is 13311 130th Place, Southeast Snohomish. Not currently a citizen of the city of Monroe. I am, however, still a taxpayer in town here. And as I call it, you know, I've been in and around the chambers with various folks up here over the last 26 years. And I guess the first question I would ask is, where's the problem with requiring or creating the need for the term limits in the first place? I've seen a lot of turnover here over the years, and that turnover has come about in recent years because of term limits in part, but in other years and many more years because of the voters doing what they want to do. They vote someone to stay in, or they vote someone to replace that person in because they're unhappy with who's sitting there now, perhaps, or at that time. Very simply, I think this is a matter of cost and benefit. In my mind, there's a lot of cost of term limits. And the biggest cost is you lose a citizen who wants to give their time for a small amount of compensation to sit up here and do what they believe to be in the best interest of the city. You force them out after 8 years. That's a huge loss to the city, to the process, and to the citizens here that have continued to support that person. That, to me, is the biggest cost of term limits. The biggest benefit of term limits? I can't think of one. We don't have problems with council members running back by huge dollars. We don't have council members coming in here for a full-time job to make the money and make a living off of this. They come in here because they want to give back to the community. So with that in mind, I would hope that you would vote to repeal the term limits. I think it came about out of a time when it was a popular idea, albeit supported by a very small number of voters in the community. Hopefully, if we go back to a vote today, maybe it should, maybe it shouldn't. I'm not going to get into that. There'd be a bigger turnout and a bigger expression of opinion on that. But lacking a vote and lacking seeing a need for the term limits to stay in place, I would say, what's your feeling? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next person who signed up to speak in the public hearing is Southern Carlson. Please come forward to state your name and address for the record. Thank you for coming.
Hi, my name is Linda Carlson. I live at 13461 from the Dallas Southeast in the world. I'm a fairly new resident of 16, and I think Ashley stated my feeling perfectly. This was put on the vote, people voted on it, and I believe we should have the term limits. We have term limits for the president. I don't see anything wrong with it. There's a lot of really appreciate the experience that people have, but I also appreciate new blood coming in. Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to come forward to speak to the City Council this evening on the subject of term limits under the public hearing? Anybody at all? Seeing nobody, we'll go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. I do thank you, thank everybody for coming out this evening and speaking on the subject. The next item on the agenda is comments from citizens. This is passed to the council for the members of the...
Sorry, point of order, Mr. Mayor.
I'm sorry,
there are three requested action items on there.
Yes, let me open up the agenda.
Thank you.
Time off.
Okay, well, I am now looking at the agenda bill. All right, so the requested actions, council members, you can see those. Are there any motions? Council member Kutback?
Move to close the citizen portion of the public hearing.
Second.
Okay, the first from Councilor Cutback and the second from Councilor Rasmussen to close the citizen testimony portion of the public hearing. Any discussion on the matter? On the motion, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Is there another motion? Councilor Cutback.
As I'm the council member that brought this forward, I think I should
go through and briefly state my reasons for looking at this again, so people can understand my rationale. So I've listed some reasons of why I don't believe that term limits are necessary for our community. First, I believe that in our democracy, elections are term limits. Before we limit a person's right to elect an individual, there must be a compelling data reason, driven reason to do so. We don't have it in this case. The statistics in Monroe do not show that there has ever been an issue with entrenchment in our local government. In fact, quite the opposite, as incumbents are voted in and out on a regular basis, especially over the last 1 year. Second, I believe it's important that we limit any barriers to running for office, especially in a small community. That is why a majority of cities currently don't have term limits or have moved away from term limits in recent years. Third, a compelling reason to have term limits would be if there was big money or entrenchment, like you see at the federal level. That's not going on here. I really appreciated Ms. Tuttle's comment a few weeks ago, and she brought up a comment that I hadn't even thought about. She stated that at the federal level, people leave. They're in Washington, D.C. They lose touch with the local residents. We don't have that here. Everyone who sits up here, they're still in the community. They go attend soccer games. They shop at the local grocery store. They stay in contact with members of the community. They don't lose that contact, which can happen at the federal level. Fourth, I believe that at times as a council member, I have to view the evidence and do what is best for the city. That is why people elected me. I refuse to allow initiative 502 in our city limits for recreational selling of marijuana production distribution, even though 9 out of the 12 precincts passed the initiative in Monroe, because based on the information I was privy to, I knew the conflict with the federal law and the selling, production, distribution of marijuana was going to be an issue for our community. People, when they voted on, they didn't think about it. They thought about it in their private homes, might be okay, but the selling of a distribution next to them, they did not want that. We had many people come out and speak after the vote and say they did not want it in our community. Fifth, the advisory ballot on this issue is simply that. It was an advisory ballot. It wasn't like Initiative 502. This was simply a piece of information that we were supposed to use as council members in making the decision. It's a part of the data. There's other data that should be included when we make decisions, not simply just the advisory ballot. And that's my job, and I take it seriously, to look at all of that and not just one slice of it. Last point I'll make is that, and it's what Councilmember Hanford brought up. He brought up, when people think about term limits, I think they have that negative perception of entrenchment at the federal level. And again, we don't have that here. We're not the same as the federal level. We're not the same as the president. We represent a smaller community that we work, live in, or hear on a weekly, daily basis. I have really appreciated all the comments I've heard, the issues, the discussion. It actually surprises me, based on that this has been in the news, that we didn't have more people come forward. We received 5 emails not in favor of filling term limits. 2 of them were previous council members, or the mayor who sat on here. So I didn't see an outpouring of public input on this. As we saw in Walmart, traffic cameras, as you go on and on, East Monroe, those items, we saw an outpouring of community involvement, no matter what time of year it was. And then I would like to address one comment that was made in an email that was sent to us today. And it surprised me, the comment, because it was someone who served up here, and they viewed repealing term limits as, quoting, self-serving arrogance. And I would hope, from what I know of everyone that has served up here, to be honest, this is an incredibly tough job, where, you know, people can be yelled at, bullied, lots of time away from your family, challenging. People that sit up here give a lot. for very little minimal monetary impact. I think most people serve up here because they have a servant heart, because they want the chance to be involved in their community and give back, as Mr. Demmer said. So I don't see we're feeling it's a self-serving arrogance. I think it's our job again to look at all the data, to look at the advisory vote, consider it, look at the entrenchment, look at the issues, but certainly not think of that we're doing this for any of us in particular, that this is truly something that should be made for the decisions of the veteran community. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there a motion? Councilmember Cutback?
We are closing the public hearing.
We closed the public hearing. We closed the citizen testimony portion.
So I will make a motion to close the public hearing.
Second. Okay, there's a motion from Councilmember Cutback and a second from Councilmember Rasmussen to close the public hearing. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Is there another motion?
You'll know the tenor of council, and not sure how the rest of council feels about this. I am still going to make a motion, however, and I'm going to move to accept as the first reading ordinance number 021-2015, repealing Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 2.26, term limits for elected officials, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
There's a motion from Councilmember Cutback for requested action C in the agenda bill. Is there a second? Okay, there is no second. Councilmember Scarborough?
So, in seconding this motion, it would only be if that's the first reading that we have not voted on whether to or not to do this.
What's up about?
The motion is to accept this first reading ordinance, and typically what happens would be that this would come back for a second reading, and based on council's procedure, that's often the time that council will consider taking final action on it. Anything further, Councilmember Serber? Councilmember Rasmussen?
I'm fine moving forward with this as a first reading, but just to make my comments clear. Kind of on the fence, as many are on this. I mean,
point of order, please. Excuse me.
Yes.
We need a second in order to move to discussion, whether you take a vote or not. It's just a procedural matter. So if you would like to discuss this further, if someone would make a second and open the floor to discussion, that would be the appropriate course of action.
I'm sorry. I'll second it. Okay. So there's a first from Councilmember Cutback, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen to move to accept this first reading the ordinance. All right, so, Councilor Rasmussen, you have the floor for discussion on the motion.
Sure, thank you. So as I was starting to say, I'm still on the fence on this. I mean, you know, when it was brought forward, I really didn't see term limits as a overbearing issue. You know, quite frankly, still don't. And, you know, I can decide on the fact of, you know, granted the limited number of votes that were cast back when this was on the ballot, those were votes. And I take those to heart just as I do with comments from citizens today. So that's, you know, for me, I'm still weighing all that out. But, you know, I, so first reading, fine. Next week, I'm more prepared to have that final decision after hopefully hearing from a few more people, looking at it a little bit more. But honestly, I didn't think it was a problem before. So,
thank you. Councilman Kent.
Thank you. I have to agree with some of the points that you made tonight. 5-6 years ago, when this first came up, when I was first on the council, or actually, once I was sitting in the audience, originally I was in favor of term limits. As I learned more and more about it, I was opposed to term limits. However, I wanted to see it on voting. So when I was finally appointed up here, I made sure that I approved that I go to the ballot. And then we got the response, 76% of the people said, yeah, we want term limits. I don't have any objections to eliminating term limits. I don't have any objections to modifying the term limit laws or ordinance we have here. I'm concerned about the methodology. We went to the effort of having a ballot or having this issue placed on the ballot and have it reviewed. And it passed overwhelmingly. Now, I recognize that the way is having a few public hearings doesn't quite feel right. Some words I've heard is sneaking backdoor. The total impact of this is just to us, and it doesn't. This is how the people want us to run their government. So that's why I object to this particular manner of getting rid of the term limit. Those are the high points. I've made other issues, and we've looked at the emails from a former mayor, former council members, people I've just talked to at the local coffee shops. And I must admit, I think I've heard three people other than people up here who've been in favor of eliminating the term limits using this method. Almost without exception, if they're not opposed to eliminating the term limits, or at least willing to have them modified without a ballot issue. But if they're eliminated, they really want to go back to the ballot. The only thing I would like to ask mayors is to have a roll call vote for this, because it does have an impact on the people, and it was reflected in terms of how the roll will work. That's it for me. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilor Scarborough.
Now, being relatively new, I agree with Councilman Camp. It's not that I'm against not having a term on it. I feel the same way since it went through the vote of the people. If we're going to change that, then I would go back to the vote of the people. I am for modifying our term limits, as we've talked about, because of changing the 2-year at large from 2 years to 4 years, and how it affects a couple of the people on the council at this time. So changing it from 8 to 12 without going to a vote of the people I'm okay with, whether we're going to go to the eliminating the term limits.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
So this was one of the first things that I experienced as a new council member. And personally, I've never been for term limits. I can see the purpose in the larger federal level. But I've never been comfortable with them at the local level, because exactly what you said, we're here. There's not a problem with communicating with us. We should have a good idea of what's going on in the community. But we certainly are available to find out if somebody wants to tell us. But I voted for it. And the reason I voted for it was the vote that had previously been done with the very high percentage of people voting for it. And my opinion was that it's not about my personal opinion in this case. It's about, I think, if the community has spoken, and we spoke by public, and that's so here we are today, and some good points have been made. But we have this, the will of the people, conflicting with itself. Because I think, like you said, the no term limits is, in its purest form, is when people show up to the ballot and they vote for somebody, yes or no, or no. The will of the people. The people speak when they vote. And that's in direct conflict now with the will of the people in the past, who did speak. They voted 76%. They spoke quite loudly on that. So now we've got a conflict between people that voted in the past with people that were voted in the future. And they oppose each other. And so I have, you know, I've come to a place of where do I go from here? I can fall back on my personal opinion, and I'm not for term limits, but I still have to respect that previous level. Having thought about that and looked at it from that perspective, I'm also in favor of the possibility of extending it for 12 years, because I agree with you. The two terms seem short, and it seems to be a waste. Once you really get an understanding and a feeling of how the city works and things like that, and then you get the end of your term. So I would be okay with the possibility of extending it to 12 years. So, and also, I would like to hear more, I guess maybe a little more discussion from a couple other people. And see what they have to say. That's fine. That's where I stand.
Thank you. Okay, is there anybody else, any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, unless there's objection, I'll go ahead and do a roll call for this. Since I haven't done one of those here in about 3 years, do you call them?
Yeah, we've never done one since I've been here either. So would you like to? Would you like me to?
I think what you do is you read down the.
Sure.
If he's in another place I work, that's what happens.
All right, here we go then.
Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and call for the question, and for roll call vote, that means that our city clerk will just read down the list, and the council members will respond as she calls her name. Ms. Smoot?
Certainly. Councilmember Scarborough? Oh, yes.
Do we need to have the motion ready?
I'd be happy to read the motion again.
Sure. Okay.
So the motion is this. It's moved to accept as first reading ordinance number 021-2016, repealing Monroe Municipal Code Chapter 2.26, term limits for elected officials, providing for severability and establishing an effective date. When the roll call vote occurs, when Ms. Smoot calls your name, I signifies the support of the motion. Nay signifies that you oppose the motion, and you also are able to abstain.
Correct.
All right, Ms. Smoot.
Okay. Councilmember Scarborough.
Nay.
Councilmember Cuddeback.
Aye.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Nay.
Councilmember Davis.
Nay.
And Councilmember Camp.
Nay.
Thank you.
So by a vote of 1-4, the motion fails, and therefore this will not be brought back for a second reading next week. Thank you very much. Because you did a roll call vote, I don't need to say who responded. All right, the next item, thank you everybody. The next item on our agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the city of such as any additional matters subject to the public hearing. We have a sign-in sheet, and each person is limited to 3 minutes for their presentation. So the first person we have signed up to speak is Cal Hansen. Mr. Hansen, please come forward and say your name and have a seat.
My name is Cal Hansen. I live at 25215, 146th Place, Southeast Monroe. And that's out of the city limits. And I've been a resident of Monroe for 76 years. If you have some concerns, I'd like to address to the mayor and the council. and it has to do with very difficult to see someone in the crosswalks at night, especially in the rain, which we had quite a bit of rain, as we always do. And where it's at is Main and Blakely, Main and Lewis, Main and Ferry. The street lighting is very poor. What has happened is, what brought me down here this evening is, in the last 3 weeks, my wife and I have almost hit people in these crosswalks in the evening, at night, when it's raining and in the dark. People are not using the flags. Example, last Friday night, about 6, about 5:30, I was coming down Main Street, and at the crosswalk of Blakely and Main, there's a family crossing the walk, and I didn't see them. I wasn't going very fast. Didn't see them until they stepped out in front of me. I hit the brakes, and thank God I had good reflex. I rolled down my window and asked them very politely if they could use a flag when they're passing one across the crosswalk. And they said, well, they didn't think about that. Now, the other concern is, since the reconstruction of Main Street, which I was opposed to, this could have been, no, I voiced my opinion more than once. Been here all my life. I've seen Main Street parking, diagonal, parallel parking, the whole kit and caboodle. When I've seen this in the paper, I'm so sure. And I'm still very upset with the decision being made. But I thought I'll give it a chance. Well, give it a chance. If there's oversized vehicles parked diagonally, you can't get by them without stopping and letting the eastbound traffic flow. That's a point of concern. That's a safety concern as far as I'm concerned. And in reference to my item number one, I've had numerous close calls, and I think it needs to be addressed that we need better lighting on Main Street, especially the crosswalk. I lost my mother 19 years ago in May. She got hit in the crosswalk up here at 7-Eleven on Ferry in Maine. So it is very dear and hard to me. I don't want to see another fatality there. But she'd probably be alive today. I'm asking you, the City Council, to address these concerns in a timely manner due to the fact that we have long, cold, dark, rainy nights. If there's anything that can be done, that another concern I have is Oak Street. Behind the old Albertsons, I call it Albertsons, there. I've been concerned about the maintenance on here. I've been down to City Hall, I'll call it, we do a rebuttal from the city engineer. I didn't appreciate it. There's a chuck hole back there about 9 months ago. You could, this deep, this big around. Said it wasn't a city concern, that was a private street. I said, well, then why do I found a sign up by my, where I live, that had Old Owen and Oak Street on. I brought it down to City Hall. I said, why do we have a sign there saying it's a city street then, if it's private? I'd like to see something, because there's a mess back there. It's a posh spot. So whatever you can do, help us. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hanson.
Yes, sir.
You had Ferry in Maine, Blakely in Maine. What was the third one?
And Lewis. Yeah. All three intersections there.
And I have a question for you. Have you been behind Albertsons in the last week?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
And what do you think of what they've done?
That wasn't the city, was it?
I don't know.
No, it wasn't?
No, but I...
That's a private guy.
Yes, but do you think that's well received?
Well, I'll say one thing. It looks better than it did, because when I would come in from my way, coming into town, you try to take and make a turn there, they're rolling blackberries, to the guy, whoever it was, my wife's feet. Yeah, and then you couldn't see if it pulled up on the oak, to look east on the old one. You had to pull almost, put your nose out into the traffic lane before you could take your seat. If there were any vehicles coming. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson.
Yes, sir.
The next person we have to sign up to speak is Wayne Rutland. Just drop him. I just look forward to saying the name and address for the record.
Wayne Rutland, 17517 West Main. I read the paper where you were going to hire a consultant to hire an administrator. And I've done that about three times. And every time we've done that, ended up that we, which you guys are, made the decision to do what the consultant would have done, and you spent a bunch of money on the consultant. So I think that you've got a whole bunch of good consultants here, and the mayor too. The mayor's a good hire. In the past, I always looked to hire within, because they know what's going on. And you have a very qualified person within already. I won't name any names, but it's probably easier to hire a planner than it is to hire a minister. Does that give you an idea of what I'm talking about? That's what I'm going to tell you guys, and good luck with your choice.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Rutland.
Thank you.
The next person we have assigned to speak is Shirley St. Pierre. And Ms. St. Pierre, I am sorry I didn't call you back.
No, we did not. That was going to address that as well. I left my number.
I've got it again right here. I have a system to make certain I follow up. I was just checking my phone. I didn't flag your number. I did not call you back. I'm sorry about that.
I'll accept that apology, but it's like there's a song out there that says, you got my number.
I got your number.
And I was waiting. Oh, not with any bated breath. Well, I've been there. I know what it's like. Okay. My name is Shelley. Same here. I live at 1846 Street in Beery Lane. I've been a resident of Monroe for a year and a half. I'm in my second year. Okay. And I addressed you a month ago. And so I appreciate your intention to now contact me. I'll start with the senior center. And again, it's at Monroe East Side Senior Center. And I was told by the individual was not here this evening when I stepped outside. I said, how did I do? And she said, I didn't hear a word you said. And then she said, oh, and besides, the senior center is privately owned. Well, hello, that was a lie, she told me, because she heard something and I didn't know it was privately owned. And then she continued to say, I am the house, it's privately owned, it has nothing to do with the council. So I looked it up, and the library is privately owned. I can't find any further to whom I need to direct anything. But again, I'll repeat that if I direct it to the board that's there, I'm not getting anywhere because they pick the individual. So, first I will address what is going on there. Service dog. I have a friend, she's very, very ill, and she cannot come. And so, on behalf of all service dogs, I have here the Washington State Human Rights Commission's Guide to Service Animals. I'll present it to you, and this needs to go to whomever you can direct me to give it to. It goes to the senior center, it goes to Snohomish County, goes to the police department, and I expect this to be regarded and upheld at that facility. Okay, that's number one. Number two, harassment. I told you that the individual that is there, his name is Jacob McGee. He was an assistant for 11 years. Now he is the administrator. He's harassing this individual, and he has harassed her for 2.5 months. The straw that broke the dam, the bat. He picked on her, told her dog couldn't be there. He harassed her in front of everybody. He did not pull her aside. I again am giving you the Monroe Public School. The Monroe Public School harassment and bullying rules. That should apply to the senior center and any other public facility here, because that is very important, and your citizens should not be harassed. There was an article legal. I don't know if anybody, because I told you about the menu at the senior center, had the opportunity to eat there. This is a good one. December's got a lot of good people coming in. I haven't even been to Old Gulf. I've been too sick. I don't want to get other people sick or myself sicker. Here's a menu. Try to hit it on a bad day. It's still horrendous. Also, there was a brief in the Tribune. And this is a brief on Light of Monroe, which you spoke about at the last meeting. His article in the brief, and maybe you had it in other places, obviously did. But basic objective when you're writing journalism is who, what, when, where, why. I believe the time wasn't listed, or the date, something's missing there. So how are people to know only pointing because they weren't there? And then there are some other things to address, but I'm running out of time. I'll be back. I will be back.
Thank you, and I'll contact you by Friday.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I haven't even touched on the phone, and that's major, major.
The next person we have decided to speak this evening under public comment is Linda Carlson again. Ms. Carlson?
Mm-hmm.
Was this on parking?
Yes, you wrote on parking.
Yeah. Again, my name is Linda Carlson. I'm on the Board of Trustees for Farmer Hill. We have parking regulations for the Homeowners Association, which we are reviewing. I understand you're reviewing your parking situation. We came across moving containers. It has been on Rainier View Road for about 3 weeks. As I called to check on it today, apparently they've had 6 different containers delivered. But I was informed that they are not, that the parking regulations for the city cover trucks, cars, motorhomes, but they didn't, I guess it was written in the 70s, they didn't cover containers, other things that might be parked on the street. We also have a lot of construction going on in the neighborhood. The other day, I could hardly navigate Rainier View Road because there were approximately 10 tandem dump trucks parked on Rainier View Road and accessing the new building site. I don't know what the regulations are, but I believe they should be regulations if they're building. That the parking be addressed for the area that they are building and not in existing neighborhoods. So I invite you to review that as you're making your decision. Thank you.
Ms. Carlson, somebody from staff will touch base with you in the next couple of days.
Thank you.
And just go out and take a look and see what's going on.
Actually, someone went out there today.
Okay, great.
From the police department.
From PD, okay.
And that's it should be resolved within the next 2 to 4 weeks, as far as the containers. But, you know, I was informed that there was no law against them.
Okay, good to know. Thank you very much. All right, the next person we have signed up to speak is Silas Dunn. Mr. Dunn.
Thank you guys for letting me speak. The first thing I'd like to speak about to you guys is about the Dakota Access Pipeline that's going on in North Dakota. And the reason I want to tell you about this is because right now in North Dakota, this pipeline is being built through the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe's land. And for many months, they have been harassed, and they have been maced, pepper sprayed, tear gas, shot rubber bullets. They've had LRAD sound weapons. They've used electronic jammers, armored vehicles. They've unlawfully arrested and tortured water protectors, put hoods on water protectors. All this is totally illegal. They have released dogs on peaceful protectors, and dogs have bit their flesh. And they have been sprayed by water cannons with freezing temperatures. And the reason I bring this up here is because the pipeline is being funded by banks, and some of those banks, bank chains, are in our town. For example, U.S. Bank, Bank of America, Chase Bank, and Wells Fargo. And I really would like to encourage everyone here to take their money out of those banks and put them into local credit unions. I've been trying to do research to help people to find places to put their money instead of these banks so that we're not funding these horrendous attacks on Native Americans. And so I would like to continue speaking with all of you to help make that happen, take steps to do so. Second thing I would like to talk about is water fluoridation, which I've already spoke to you, Mr. Mayor, about, and I'm concerned about it. I feel like it does have a negative health impact on our community. And when I met with you, I showed you the water quality report, and it does state there that fluoride and chlorine are added, and those are known neurotoxins. And you encouraged me to talk to the Monroe City Council, and I'm here doing that. Glad to do it. And also, I have gone to the Everett City Council meeting. I haven't spoke to them or made a public comment, but I did listen, and I spoke with someone afterwards telling me that there's been many people, hundreds of people, trying to get the fluoride out of the water system. And I looked it up, and there is a man named James Robert Deal, who is attorney in Linwood, and he released a press release with a chemistry professor, and I would just like to read a little bit of what it says by James Robert Deal. Washington law is very clear. Fluoridation may only be done using fluoridation materials which comply with the National Sanitation Foundation Rule 60, which contains EPA's approved set of guidelines for fluoridation materials. Rule 60 says that 20 toxicology tests and a risk examination test must be done on fluoridation materials. There's absolute proof that the toxicology tests have never been done, and the risk estimation calculations are being ignored. Thus, fluoridation materials do not comply with Washington law, and using them to fluoridate is illegal. The Dr. Richard Sauerheber, chemistry professor, says fluoridation chemicals used are not naturally occurring calcium fluoride. They are not pharmaceutical grade. They're toxic waste from fertilizer production, and the National Sanitation Foundation openly admits that fluoridation materials contain lead, arsenic, cadmium, mercury, and among other things.
Mr. Duncan, yes, just to wrap up, and you certainly can leave that with the clerk, and what she'll do is she'll forward the document to all the council members.
Yes, I would love for everyone to read this and look at that. Also, I just want to say one more thing. This is a very small thing, but I understand that recreational marijuana shops have been banned from this town. That's totally fine and okay. But for some reason, right now, there's a product being sold in the tobacco stores that's called Spice, and it's an artificial marijuana that's very toxic. And I personally made a very unwise decision back in high school, and I used that. And I almost had to go to the emergency room because it had a huge effect on my heart. I have many friends around here that unfortunately they're struggling with drug addictions, and some of them come all the way from Gold Bar and Sultan to get this Spice, which is an artificial weed, and smoke, and I've seen them have seizures on it, and it's very scary. And I would like you guys to take this seriously and help ban that from the tobacco stores in this town.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did you hear the pipeline that moved
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to come forward and speak to the city council this evening on this house? You're here for the public hearing. Please go ahead and say your name and address.
I actually just wanted to say Merry Christmas, and I wanted to touch on some awesome things that have happened in the room this year. There's a long time I came to the city, I didn't meet up on, but there are some really cool things that have happened in this town. My husband and I are really blessed to get to travel quite a bit, and the different countries we go to, I have to say, like, we are all so excited to come home. You know, we complain about the trash in the road sometimes, and we've led some pickups, but we go to Italy and you realize the road's not that trashy. The graffiti's not that bad. And so I'm just really thankful for that, and I'm thankful for this town where you do run into you guys at the grocery store, that you can't have a candid conversation. I'm super thankful for Tierney Place. Oh my goodness. We could get like a local sign for highway too, so people would just have to move out of your way when it's not local. But Tierney Place just really, that is behind Sabre, right? It just really is open up opportunity. Our town is such a fun gateway for people going to the mountains and just exploring, so it's really nice to be able to get places. The sidewalks also on Chain Lake Road, wow, what a cool improvement that was this year. And the construction staff that you all have hired on these projects, I know it's public, so it's city, but they've really been awesome because the people on Rosemont, I mean, it took a little bit, but you couldn't be mad at those guys. They were awesome and friendly and joking with the citizens. And so I just think there's a lot to be thankful for. Downtown Monroe, a lot of people didn't like it, and I get the parking because, yeah, there's a big vehicle. It is very dangerous. But really, I think it makes our downtown look a lot better, and our tree being down there, and I've seen people taking ownership in their community this year, which has been really cool. So thank you for allowing me to be a part of your meetings. I just want you to know that, like, I really appreciate what you guys do, and I think sometimes we disagree and sometimes we agree, but that's the fun part of being an intelligent person who takes time to care about what they're doing. So thank you all for being intelligent.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anybody else who'd like to come forward to speak to the city council this evening under public comment? Anybody at all? All right. We're going to go ahead and move on to the consent agenda now. Councilmember, is there a motion? Councilmember Hinton.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
We have a first from Councilmember Kent, a second from Councilmember Cutterback to approve the consent agenda. Any discussion or motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. And Ms. Schmidt, we get to read an ordinance on the consent agenda.
Yes, thank you. Actually, two ordinances were approved through the consent agenda. Ordinance number 022-2016, amending Monroe Municipal Code Title 15, Buildings and Construction, Title 17, Subdivisions, Title 18, Planning and Zoning, and Title 20, Environment, implementing the Federal Clean Water Act National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System Phase 2 requirements, and making other minor code revisions, providing for severability, and establishing an effective date. And the second one is ordinance number 023-2016, amending Chapter 10.10 MMC parking regulations, updating and clarifying the applicability of the city's parking zone regulations to motorhomes, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda this evening is unfinished business. Item number 1, AB 16167, discussion of the Barry Lane, Chelsea Street traffic revisions, options, and the pros and cons. And I believe that this is Mr. Bauer.
Thank you, sir. A few months ago, this came to inform the City Council, and there was much public interest in the solution that was going to happen at this intersection. And also the desire to have additional information on what's actually happening at that intersection. With council approval, we hired peers to do a study of that intersection, and they studied the four options that the city council had directed them to study, which was the raised islands, the no left turn signs, the additional northbound lane south of Blueberry Lane, and then also the full build-out of the signalized intersection with the additional lanes north of the railroad tracks. The consultants have, Carmen and Kendra are here to do a presentation, which they have on the PowerPoint, and so you'll have to scoot over there a little bit. And then after that, we'll open it up for questions.
Allow for full movement at the intersection, so there would be no turn restrictions.
And the last concept would be a full traffic signal to be built at the intersection with a northbound left turn queue, a turn pocket to allow a space for vehicles to make that left turn on the Blueberry Lane without getting stuck behind northbound traffic. This concept would also include widening of the roadway. The first part of our analysis was to figure out how vehicles would reroute with the turn restrictions under concept A and B. So you can see here at the top of the graphic, if you were to restrict the northbound left turn lane, or turn movement at the intersection, vehicles, about half of them, would reroute onto US 2 via Lewis Street, or they would head south onto Columbia Street. And if you were to restrict the eastbound left turns out of Blueberry Lane, you would have vehicles that would make a right turn down Kelsey. You would have vehicles reroute along Columbia Street to the south, and about 40% of vehicles would reroute up to through this analysis, we found that approximately 100 vehicles or less would be added on any corridor of the city street. So the vehicle-weighted corridor-level service would continue to meet the city's LOSD standards in 2035. To summarize our analysis, we looked at each of the four concepts and evaluated each one against the operation at the intersection safety, business access, and relative cost of each option. So under operations, concept A and C are very similar, as they would both prohibit turns in the northbound left and eastbound left. While concept C, E would continue to allow full movement at the intersection, it can be a little bit more difficult, and there'd be higher delay experienced by vehicles making an eastbound left out of Blueberry Lane. And with a traffic signal at the intersection, there's more equal time allocated to traffic on each approach, so it performs the best. Under safety, concept A, B, and F performed relatively the same. Concept E was a little bit, well, it's an improvement from existing conditions. It doesn't have as much, it's not as safe as concept A and B because it continues to allow left turns of Blueberry Lane. For business access, concept A and B with the turn restrictions would reduce business access because of the turn restrictions, so that's why it does not perform as well. The traffic signal in concept F, there's more time equally allocated to movements, and so vehicles can access other nearby businesses on Kelsey Street. And then for relative cost, there's actually a slight mistake. Concept A would perform not as well as concept B because of the cost to implement a raised island. But concept P and F would, of course, cost the most because of right-of-way requirements and then installing an actual signal at the intersection. So with that, I'm ready to answer any questions that people may have.
I do have one question, and a few councilmembers will have questions as well. There's a proposed multifamily project on Blueberry. Was that considered in any of this analysis?
I'm not sure, but I believe that there's a proposed multifamily development at that location.
And then I would say that was included in the future forecast, so they said that they're adding traffic volumes. We have that captured in our 2035 analysis.
Okay, thank you. And when you were looking at the business access on ANC, it would be my expectation that on the north side of the railroad tracks that we would be installing C-curve regardless of which option we would go with. So is the business access for ANC, does that include the C-curve on the north side?
No,
it does not. Okay, so the business access then includes Rite Aid and Denny's on the north side and also the safety ring?
Yes.
Councilmember Hinford. Councilmember not Hinford. Councilmember Scarborough.
Is there a dollar figure attached to the red lines or anything?
They're in the report. What, just so we don't smoke the report, what are the costs of AC, E&F?
These were provided by Scott, but it looks like for Conduit A, $10,000. For Rain Island, Concept C, $700 for the fine. Concept E is $457,000, and that's due to the right-of-way requirement that's needed for widening. And then Concept F, it's $1.2 million because it's a pretty complicated project.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough, do you have any questions? All right. And I didn't see one first, so Councilmember Fetterman.
Can you go back to the church with the, raised island or the, curb? So, and then the, just the curb one. So I wanted to make sure, because we had a business owner come from State Roofing when we were looking at doing the curb, the straight curb, and they said, and I'm not sure if this would work or not, but they were saying that it was hard with the curbs there to be able to turn their trucks into that State Roofing. Yeah, out of and into, and so that was an issue then. Is that addressed here, or did you take that into consideration, that business and trucks being able to go in and out?
That was not considered part of our project and our analysis. Okay. We're looking at traffic operations, but I think if you were to proceed with this option, you could do some preliminary design on like truck turning radius to help evaluate if the extent of the sea curve would be feasible for us.
Okay.
For that business.
Okay.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Well, that was my question too. I was going to ask how each one of the concepts would affect the room that went there, and if you take into consideration.
Mm-hmm. So the red arrow down on business access. The red arrow down on business access on the comparisons. That's basically when you put the C curve in, you know, compromise the access to State Roofers.
I have a few questions about how this is structured. So each one of these scenarios has full north-south access, both directions, right?
Yes.
Okay. and you won't have, let's go back to, is it A? That's the first one. Mm-hmm. All right, so you have full north-south access. Don't have left turn off Blueberry onto Kelsey.
Correct.
Right. And you don't have a left turn off Kelsey onto Blueberry.
Yes.
Okay, this is probably beyond the scope. I'm still concerned about this being an east west connector around Highway 2. Ms. Sellers was here saying how happy she was about Tierney, and this would effectively shut that down. How much traffic flow north and southbound on Kelsey? Did you know that?
Yeah, that was for the data collection process. And so we have the TMT hour period. Northbound, southbound.
Is there more northbound traffic than southbound, or is there any comparison?
We have 350 going northbound and about 250 going southbound.
So it's roughly two-thirds. And then impacts to Columbia. So if you turn off, eliminate left turn on Kelsen and left turn on the Blueberry, all that's going to get moved down to Columbia, right?
To get back to the traffic flow for the
residents.
Yes.
And I thought, 49%, you're going to have to explain this a little bit. It says 49%, right?
45%.
45%? Okay. would be redirected down to Columbia for Kelsey to avoid the changes that are made up there. Now, what about the second one?
So the second graphic shows how traffic would reroute if you were to prohibit eastbound left turns out of Blueberry. And so you have probably about 35% of traffic would take a right and head towards Hill Street.
Okay.
About 20% of vehicles would actually go west on 154th and go down to Columbia. And about 40% of traffic would head north on 179th and head east on
Great job with this. I really like it. However, my concerns still are, and these are not reflective on your work, that is the loss of the east-west connector that we created with Jeremy, the impact of state roofing and other businesses along that area, the impact to Columbia, if we're going to increase traffic flow, we're going to have to do some traffic revisions and look at impacts. Unless there's more that you can explain to me, I think
Well, I think, you know, just to keep in mind, and again, we're just trying to be factual here. So the choices are certainly not here to advocate for one action option or another. You know, one thing I will say is that we do see growing traffic volumes along Blueberry Lane, you know, and as we move into the future, as we have more development, as the city grows and matures. Something that we see is that without some level of improvements to this intersection, you're going to have growing queues along Blueberry approaching the intersection. So if you were to do nothing, we're going to see growing queues along here. So longer and longer waits. So when you're talking about an east-west connection, I don't know in a do-nothing scenario if that would be an acceptable east-west connection. So, you know, the options that we've looked at, you know, certainly the one that, you know, provides for those eastbound left turn movement for folks that are wanting to go then north up to US 2. The signal certainly does that, but in looking at it, you know, we're aware that there's a lot of technical challenges around providing a signal there. It's very expensive, as we've seen. A big piece of it is its proximity to the railroad. So this would be your standard run of the mill signal that we're putting. So certainly not advocating that this is an easy question or problem to solve. But those were some of the considerations we had, and, you know, I think your point is very well taken. Columbia is a fairly local serving, local character type road today. I agree with you that if you're going to have substantial traffic volumes, and we're not saying this is substantial, and Carmen can probably give you the actual numbers for talking in the PMP power, but with that, you know, it could potentially change the character of Columbia.
No, and I appreciate the work that you've done, especially showing the pickup truck going down the wrong way, since I just a few days ago I had a little interaction with somebody coming up that road as I was trying to turn right. So it has a personal impact. Anyway, that's all. Thank you.
And we have a couple more questions for you. But I've got a couple questions myself also, just want to ask really quickly. Can you go back to E, please? Okay, and so if we were to consider sort of a phased approach to making improvements here, is there much of a difference in terms of land acquisition and developing to the curbs between E and was it F? Like, could we do E and then come back and do F at a future date without having a substantial, you know, price differential compared to just going directly with F if council wanted to do that? It looks like the curb lines are about the same. The property acquisition.
South of the railroad tracks is pretty much the same. F includes additional, F actually changes the 4 northbound lanes north of the railroad tracks instead of the existing 3 that there are now.
Can you plot back over to that? Okay, that's interesting. So you'd be taking more out of the right lane parking lot.
Correct.
Got it. All right. Sounds good.
Just my initial thoughts on looking at this. It would seem to me, I agree with a lot of the comments that council member campaign, that concept E, I think, would be the best out of the bunch right now if we can afford it. Because it keeps traffic off, there's as a residential, it protects that east-west connector. I know there needs to be something to Blueberry down the road, but, and you know, it speaks to the safety by giving those two northbound lanes, which to me is the biggest issue, is that safety issue of people going around and going into southbound traffic to turn left on Blueberry. So, Brad, is there any grant funds, concept E, it's about $457,000?
Probably not, because it's not called for in our comprehensive plan, because the council decided to switch to a corridor level of service as opposed to an intersection level of service. And so the corridor does not fail, and this project is not in our comprehensive transportation plan at the moment.
Okay.
So we'd have to change our comprehensive plan to include this if the council wishes to have something done here, and then we would be able to go after grant money. Although, since this is Blueberry is not an arterial, it would probably be difficult to get grant money for it.
And is this, what's this intersection on our list of traffic jobs if it was Blueberry and Kelsey on that list?
It was before the latest transportation plan came out. Yes, it fell off the list with the new 2015 comprehensive plan.
All right, thank you.
Councilmember Cerro.
I agree with the comment. Councilman Camp. I thought when we talked about this, that we already had access to this.
Right, that right of way is already there.
We own that.
Yes.
So there's, we don't have any, we don't need any permission to do this part of this.
Correct.
From somebody's land, right?
Yeah.
So where's the issue up here?
For what issue?
For acquisition.
There's basically, you might need a little bit in a corner. There's not a lot of right of way acquisition with that one.
And the issue with state roofing was coming out of, not this driveway.
Actually, they're three north, basically, it's they have four driveways, I do believe. It's the north three of them.
Four.
Yeah. And so it's both getting in, because they come down southbound and turn left into the driveways, and also with the large trucks going out doing the turning radius, they basically have to go up over the C curve in order to make it going out right.
And I want to point out that in the analysis, to go down Columbia is the back of the school. So if you're putting more traffic in and around an elementary school, you want to consider whether you want to push that traffic that way.
Yes,
I
know.
Yes,
sir. Although there's a fence there, they can't be used.
So one thing to realize with this, and it's probably it's driving the cost, I'd imagine, is we're changing the curb line on Concept E.
Concept E is basically the construction work and stormwater work that needs to be done, in addition to the paving.
Right. So. And so, you know, just so that everybody's aware, while we might be only acquiring a small bit of property on the corner, one of the things that would happen here is that the planter strip and the sidewalk along the curb would be pushed up against the existing two duplexes that are there. So that's just one thing to be aware of.
And then with what you said, it seems to me that this, doing this would be step one, putting in the street.
Yeah. To me, this is a logical step. With all that said, the next steps here will be to take this out to a community workshop. I think it's tentatively scheduled for January 12th. We wanted to make certain that you all have an opportunity to review this and give any comments to staff. As you're looking at this, is there anything additional that you would want staff to prepare in advance for that community meeting? I imagine that we would have phone boards of each one of these alternatives. Included in there would be a cost for each one. In terms of funding sources, we all recognize that would be an extra that we would need to overcome. But that is sort of what the concept is right now.
Thank you. One thing I'd like, because I've been asked by Impact to Columbia, people who live on that particular street, and I believe there's a new development at the far west end of it. They were concerned about that in terms of their traffic flow, something like this, the impact of heavy. So we could have something concrete of this is the expected impact based on these. We have part of it, but something to see. Mm-hmm. See. Okay. And I just want to make it clear, I appreciate your work on this.
Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions or concerns? So we're going to be doing something similar for 191st. You'll have a presentation of some sort, I think in January for 191st. There's three options there. And we'll do a workshop on that. And then we're going to have a discussion about 522 next week. And we're working with DOT to have a community workshop in January or February. Those are the approximate time frame.
Mid to late January.
So as we're doing this, if there's anything we can do differently, anything that we haven't thought of, we haven't crystallized yet, so we can fix certain new property advertisements and find the correct venue and everything. All right. Thank you very much for the presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. The next item on the agenda this evening is new business. This agenda is item 16-68. Ordinance number 0-4-2016, adopting 2017 budget for first reading. Ms. Nelson.
Hello. Yep. 4 months and 23 days. This is for the 2017 budget. Listed on the agenda bill are the changes that have been made to the preliminary budget. We already did the presentation to the public hearings for the preliminary budget. Changes here, you see that added is the Department of Health assessment in the general fund, and the impact of the 2016 year-end budget amendment, which is the next agenda item that we're going to be talking about after this one, and added the zoning code update for the planning department. In the contingency fund, we've reduced the solid waste fund transfer from $788,750 to make up for the differences in the expenditures in the general fund. Street fund, we've added the downtown lighting project, lodging tax tourism fund. We've increased the allotted expenditures. I believe later on in the agenda you're going to talk about the projects that you're going to fund with this appropriation. General CPI fund shows the beginning of the balance for the bonds that are being issued as we speak. The Park CIP fund has added projects. In these projects, these changes here were actually supposed to be in the preliminary budget. It was just a miscommunication between myself and Victor that it didn't get in. These were all discussed during the budget presentations that we gave. Then the utility funds and the government debt service funds are all reflecting the new debt service that the bonds we issued are going to call for, because they start doing their debt service in 2017. We're issuing them in 2016. I wanted to make a note that we used to have to pay our GO bond debt out of the North Kelsey Debt Service Fund. I'm changing the name of that fund to the governmental debt service fund. And this is an accounting thing to be in compliance with the bars manual, because there's a small, the bonds that we're issuing, they're for the public works shop. But there's a very small portion that has to be paid out of governmental funds, because some of the public works employees, although they're mainly utility employees, there's a small portion of their work that's covered by streets, parks, and emergency management. And that part is considered a governmental function. And so a small portion of these bonds, debt service, even though they're revenue bonds, will have to be paid from governmental funds. So that's why I changed the name of that fund, so it can cover both the North Kelsey bonds and the small portion of these new bonds for their debt service, and it's just an accounting function. I'm probably giving you more information than me, but it's just an accounting function. The sewer fund, there's an added, okay, $295,000, this is my bad. My fingers must have gone crazy. I put in the wrong amount of debt service for the sewer fund in the 2017 budget. And thank goodness Brad noticed it, because he said, how come the debt service is so low? And I realized what I'd done. And so the good news is that there's fund balance in that fund to cover the debt service, because we had planned all along to make our debt payments. Bad news is Brad has less money to deal with to use for his project. But that was a Scrivener's error. That was strictly my fingers going wrong. And then fleet, we reduced these expenditures because after a second look at the replacement schedule, they felt that they didn't have to replace everything that was scheduled to be replaced. And this is our replacement schedule working. We set it up arbitrarily. You know, every 6 years this will be replaced, every 5 years this will be replaced. But they still take a second look and go, well, do we really need to? And so because of that, we were able to reduce both the expenditures and the fees charged for the other funds. And then facilities management budget was decreased due to the impact of the budget and that we were protecting next. Am I talking gibberish? I'm happy to answer any questions.
He's like, yeah.
I'm happy to answer any questions if anyone has regarding the budget.
All right, council members, are there any questions or motions?
I'll have to mark these files. Councilmember
Are you going to bring an amendment for the social worker?
Yes.
And that's
not in this budget.
It's not in
place.
So we're looking at doing that when?
I'm sorry, it was intended to be part of this.
I have never been given any information on it.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
So as this is the first reading,
right.
If we're going to...
I was under the impression that in the beginning of the year you guys were going to talk about authorizing the FTE.
No, it was intended to be, I'm very sorry, you are correct. It is supposed to be part of this budget, so
okay.
We'll need to add that into the 2017 budget.
Okay, authorize the additional FTE and
not the FTE, what we're going to do is a contract. With right.
Okay.
From what I read, it's not a full FTE.
We're not adding FTE, we're
going to
be contracting with another party.
But it's not even a full transition contract.
Correct, we would be contracting for part-time.
So this will not be an employee? We will not be paying
for it's not an employee, correct. We will be contracting, the chief has got more information on that.
Okay, I'll call Debbie and get them over there.
And then the other question, and I'm looking at my budget book, not looking at this information, but in the administration budget, for expenditures under salaries for 2016 year end, it looks like it's going to end at 152,136, but the budget for 2017 is 228,562.
Okay,
so for the administration department, it looks like we're ending the year for salaries at 152,136, but the budget for 2017 is 228,562. So that's a pretty significant jump. What is that?
Like some of it is payouts for our city administrators leaving and scheduled salary increases.
Okay. Down here it says staffing FTE. We're ending the year with one and we're going to two next year. Because when are we adding another position? And
yes. No, we did not add another position. We moved. If you look at city clerk, they have...
Okay, I can see that go down. So that was another question.
Yeah, it's going from city clerk to an admin. Because she does not... Originally, it was the thought that she was going to be doing public records work and things like that, and she is not. So she's moved out of the city clerk division. She's being put into that. There's a payout for the city administrator.
Okay, so a payout for the city administrator, and then you're moving.
And is that payout just next year, or is it over time? Is it in 1 year?
I know.
So we're paying him out fully in January?
Yes.
Okay.
Mr. Brazel?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just a slight correction. Half will be paid out in December of this year, and the other half will be January.
Okay. You would know. I'm sorry, I can't remember what, but I thought there was a second amendment you were bringing, and I don't see it here.
That's what Jane and I were just talking about, so we're going back and double check. We're just here on the dais right now, we're not remembering what that second one was.
There is a second one, I know there is.
It'll occur to us later, but it...
Do you remember?
Oh, is it included?
Well, the TMA 25,000, the health district.
The health district is here.
Okay, the district is here. Okay, so then the TMA 25.
That's 25, I'm sorry.
No, thank you, that's what it was.
The 25 is based off of the recommendation.
Yeah, and it's 25 for 2 years, I thought.
I believe so, yeah.
Right, then we just put it in the budget for next year.
Yeah, I think that's what, okay, because I didn't see there was any, so...
Yeah, and I appreciate you catching that. I am sorry with staff if there was miscommunication, but it is supposed to be amended in the current budget, and I think there was, you know, thinking through the conversations we've had, I think they thought when I was saying amend what I bring forward, what I meant was amend what I bring forward, not amend what gets approved next year, and that's I'm sorry about that.
And is there any cost in the 2017 budget for the, are we paying all of the fees, or you're requesting all the fees come out for the search and for any fees attached to a city administrator we're paying this year, or is some of that?
The interim, whatever cost for the interim will cost us, we'll just use Gene's, what we have.
A lot of your salary?
What we budgeted full year city administrator salary. So the interim will just get that salary. As far as the cost for the search for a permanent position, that will have to come out of contingency, and it's not the budget itself.
Okay, so it's not the 2017 budget. You're going to come out of contingency for, or is that part of the amendment?
No, it would be 2017 budget amendment that we would bring to you. Unless you want it put in there now.
Because we're going to come back, and because I'm not going to, can we do first reading and still make amendments to it? So that it's
absolutely.
Second,
yeah.
So what I'm going to do is a second reading so that it's all in. We'll have the roughly 50 or 60 for the social worker contract. We'll verify the 25 for the DMA, but that is indeed one that is missing because that was supposed to be in there. And then recruiting search. So when you see this next week, those three items will be in there. We'll just double, triple check that we've got it.
GMA, is that in, under planning, page 20, downtown Main Street program, the 25,000, is that what you're talking about?
I think the second thing you're thinking of is the health district, and it's in there.
And that's in there too?
Yeah, because that's the second thing that came up. It was the social worker in the health district that we've talked about since the budget came out.
I guess it is, and we talked about bringing back as an amendment, but it looks like it is in there. They're planning and terminating for the budget, $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan, what would help me, I'm not sure if it would help other council members, is when you bring back those amendments for next week, or whichever one, social worker, then I know what, if it's coming out of contingency, what the balance is going to be out of that contingency. Like, what's the end balance then? Because it sounds like when we're looking at those, there's quite a few things that we're taking out of contingency funds. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to know what the end balance of that is if we do all.
Yeah, because right now your contingency is at $1,023,000. So, yeah, you'll take it. It's on page 16. So, yeah, these two that we're adding would probably.
They would draw down contingency on that. Okay. That total comes to about 80,000.
I don't know how much the social worker is, and then And what is the other one? Oh, the 20K for, about 20?
The recruiting search.
30?
About 20K for the recruiting search. It's in the greater agenda.
And my concern or thought as we move forward, and I mentioned this about the lobbying contract, and if it seems like after this next year that the social worker is going to be an ongoing operational expense, that we find some way to keep that out of general fund versus always taking out of the contingency.
Absolutely.
That's the way I felt about the lobbying contract also, was if that's going to be a continuing expense, then we need to make sure we can fund it and fund it out of our general fund.
Right, and I'm seeing that this is a pilot project for 2 years.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm looking at right now, as which is why I think it qualifies for contingency if that's the council's pleasure as well. It is essentially 2 1-year expenses and then see how it goes.
That's all my questions
and
comments right now.
Thank you. Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Yeah, I was kind of going to ask about the social worker, which was brought up, and then the VMAs. That's really all that I had.
All right, any other questions? All right, is there a motion to accept this as first reading? Can we make those changes? Councilman Rasmussen?
I move to accept this first reading ordinance number 0. Thank you. 024-2016, adopting the budget fiscal year ending December 31st, 2017.
Okay, first from Councilman Rasmussen, second from Councilmember Davis, to move to accept as first reading ordinance number 024-2016, adopting the budget for the fiscal year ending in December 31st, 2017. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 5-0. Thank you. All right, go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda, which is amending 2016 budget, first reading. Ms. Nelson.
Yeah, this is the year-end budget amendment to get in everything that we didn't anticipate, and you know, when reality comes along. The general fund expenditures are being increased by $284,000 because guessing how many people are going to be incarcerated is a really hard thing to guess. And so jail fees are way higher than we expected. Public defender fees are way higher. I mean, it means that the police are doing their job, but you know, how much crime, how many bad things we're going to have? You know, it was more than what we estimated. And then there's some additional increases for merchant fees. And that's something that the new finance director, I'm hoping, will look into, because our bank card fees are really not out of control. And then there's leave time buyout. You're right, Gene, we're doing half of it in December for the city administrator. Okay, the contingency fund is including the $8,000 expenditure from the traffic study that we just went over, and that was approved by council back in September. Street fund expenditures are being increased by a small amount compared to the total, but they just really like to keep their ducks in a row. Capital fund is being amended to reflect the new bond issuance that we just did. That's closed. Council approved it in November. The bonds are closing on December 15th. Water fund. Our citizens this year bought more water than we estimated, so we had to buy more water, and so that includes both the revenues and expenditures by $233,000. Sewer fund had some additional repair costs that were not budgeted, same with the fleet maintenance fund, and the facility fund had increased utility costs, some of it because of the new rate structure that we have that we adopted in 2016. Where it was friendly to multifamily and some residential or high users of utilities, like the city, it was a little bit of a hit. So we had to increase our budget for utilities. And if you have any questions at all, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Councilor McMahon.
No question, but I move to accept as first reading ordinance number 025-2016, amending the budget for fiscal year 2016 to account for new revenues and expenditures, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
I have a first from Councilmember Kemp, a second from Councilmember Davis for the request to action under agenda bill number 16-169. Councilman Cutterback.
And when we have looked at those bonds, we scrubbed or put on hold the refinancing of the old debt. What are the bond rates now, and are we still looking at that possibly?
We're going to wait a month.
Wait a month and worry about it. Okay. My next question is on this sheet, Exhibit B. You mentioned earlier that our contingency fund was at $1.023 million, and on this one, it's showing that the beginning balance is $327,000.
Yeah. Oh, in 2017, in the 2017 budget, we're closing out the solid waste fund.
And okay, and would be all of that in there?
Not all of it, most of it.
Okay, so that's causing the $1 million.
That's it. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. All right, the next item on the agenda is AB 1670. This is ordinance number 026-2016, adopting MMC 6.05 chronic nuisance properties for first reading. So, as you all recall, earlier this year, we had a number of comments come in about having multiple service calls to different houses throughout our community. One of the things that I asked the chief to look into is whether or not there's another tool in the toolbox that we could use that other jurisdictions are using to take care of chronic nuisance properties. And Sergeant Irving had knowledge of this chronic nuisance property program that they have at the city of Everett, and he, working with the chief and Zach and his colleagues, we're able to tailor the chronic nuisance properties ordinance to have for Monroe. So I'm really pleased that staff and Zach and his colleagues are able to bring this forward so quickly. And thank you all very much for the work that you guys did. Chief.
This purpose of this ordinance is to ensure the establishment of chronic nuisance properties and facilitate the City of Monroe's regulation, enforcement, and abatement of such properties. I might add that a good example, one of the reasons why we need this type of ordinance is we have one particular residence in this city that we responded to 46 times last year. It was commonly referred to as a drug house, but only three of those responses had to do with drug-related issues. The rest had to do with nuisance issues, examples such as burying garbage in the backyard, sewage in the backyard, things like that. This ordinance will give us the opportunity to lump all these violations together, including drugs, and take the offender to abatement so that the issue is abated, even to even further than that if it's not taken care of.
Thank you very much. Mr. Well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple points of clarification. First of all, the example that Jim Hunter used about a particular house in the city, I think that's a very helpful example for context, but for the record, this is an ordinance that will apply uniformly to any potential property that is involved in its scope in the city, and it's not targeted at any particular property or person or business or anything like that. Second, as the ordinance does indicate, this is a non-exclusive remedy of the city. The council ultimately chooses to adopt this chapter. It does not prevent the city from utilizing any of the other enforcement mechanisms that are available to it in the code or under state law.
Thank you very much, Mr. Well. Do you have anything further, Chief?
No.
Okay, Councilmember Federer.
That was my question, is what are the penalties? Because I see where the violation penalties, it refers you to an MMC. What are some of the penalties that happen? Yeah.
So the city has a bifurcated or different options in that cross-reference code chapter for civil penalties. One is a notice of violation for the city can impose a specific penalty of fine. Another is a civil infraction mechanism, which is a simple issuance of a chip, and then there are potential criminal penalties, misdemeanor liability, if additional thresholds or costs. But I think probably the largest enforcement hammer under this approach is the ability to seek out an order of abatement from a superior court if the situation rises to that level of concern. In that situation, the city wouldn't simply be relying on its own internal administrative enforcement power. It would be tasking me or some other attorney to go to court and seek a specific warrant that would include a court order that could be tailored to the specific circumstances of that situation. And the city would be seeking any appropriate relief that would be proportionate to the nature of the threat and the degree of violation. So it's a very all-encompassing approach.
Okay. And how does that differ from a public nuisance?
This is an expansion of a public nuisance. Right. The city is given fairly broad authority under state law to designate what constitutes a public nuisance locally. And what the city would be doing if it adopts this framework is include within this broader category of nuisance generally properties that are chronic nuisance by virtue of repeated systematic history of violations that occur there, and then to abate that entire property, not on the basis of a particular violation, but an entire body.
So it's abatement as one of the penalties.
Correct.
Makes it different, more serious than a public nuisance. Or can we do abatement in the public nuisance?
They, correct. The short answer is you're not limited. This is a non-exclusive enforcement approach. That is one option that you have at your fingertips.
Okay.
But the ability to designate, the chief of police to designate a particular property as a chronic nuisance based on its history of non-compliance in any number of different contexts. All the different statutes, all the different ordinances that you see called out in the proposed enactment tonight, all fall in a larger bundle. If there are a history of any of those violations, they satisfy the timing and merit limits that are contained in the definition of a chronic nuisance, that's what starts the entire enforcement procedure.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out what's the difference between something being a nuisance. Is it the same penalty as something being a chronic nuisance?
The chronic nuisance really goes to the designation.
Yeah, I get that.
But
it would seem like it would give us more than...
It does give us more. It's the ability to go to court and have an enforceable order of abatement from the court that addresses the entire precise.
Okay, I just want to make sure, because, I mean, if it was the same penalty and the same... But if this gives us more ability for a harsher penalty, possibly...
It does. It really, I think the abatement authority based on the history of the premises, that's really the connector here.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Is there a motion? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Move to accept this first reading ordinance number 36/2016, amending the Title VI Monroe Municipal Code by addition of chapters 5 for chronic nuisance properties, thereto designating properties with a documented persistent history of legal noncompliance as chronic nuisances subject to enforcement and abatement, adopting standards and procedures, therefore providing for severability and fixing a claim that is deemed to be effective.
Second.
Okay, the first from Councilmember Rasmussen, the second from Councilmember Cutback for the requested action in Agenda Bill number 16-170. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much, everybody. All right, let's go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. This next item is Agenda Bill 16-171, ordinance number 027-2016, amending MNC. 2.44.030, City Administrator. Looks like I am down as the presenter. Surprise, surprise. Okay. So what this is a housekeeping amendment to the municipal code. The way the code is written today is not consistent with state law. The code change would do is it would change the appointment process for the city administrator to be the city administrator shall be appointed by the mayor subject to confirmation of the city council. And the way that our code is written right now, it provides that the city administrator may only be disciplined or removed by the mayor with the concurrence of the city council by a majority vote. So since we have our city administrator leaving at this time, it is a logical time for us to update the section of code so that the both the interim that we would bring on as well as the permanent administrator would be aware of what local law is consistent with state law. And I think that's pretty much it. Zach, do you have anything else to add?
No, Mr. Mayor, I don't think I would add anything more than the memo that I previously provided to the city council on this point. My view is to determine this proposed change is simply a housekeeping measure that brings the existing text of the MEC in this context into clear compliance with what the LGW contemplates.
Thank you. All right, Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I think this is for the city attorney. So confirmation for current appointees is vote. It just specifies confirmation. Does it say
that's correct? It would be a vote just like any other vote. Okay. In my opinion, there's no need or requirement or arguably allowance for a supermajority vote in the contest. Okay, that's the part of your question.
No, I just wanted to make sure.
Yes, that's the same voting rules as the council would be.
That's what's.
Yeah, the removal of majority was not so that they could pass on the 1-6 vote.
Oh, 1-6 before Lincoln and I or something like that. Having heard that, I would like to move to accept as first reading ordinance number 027-2016, amending the Monroe Municipal Code, Chapter 2.44, City Administrator, clarifying the respective roles of the mayor and city council respectively concerning said office, providing for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second. We have a first from Councilmember Kim, second from Councilmember Davis for the request of action and agenda bill number 16-171. Thank you. Discussion, Councilmember Kovac.
So my question is, because I read the memo and so this gets it consistent with state law. Do you know when this was put in or why it was put in and how long it's been inconsistent and the state law changed, you know?
So I can't speak to the thought process behind its original enactment. My recollection, and I could defer to the city clerk on that, is that it occurred at some point in the early 1990s. I'm not aware that state law changed appreciably on this particular point in the interim period. However, I also know, having represented cities for as long as I have, that there are often factors that occur based on circumstances of individual municipalities that could have lent some additional nuance to this that I'm just not aware of from my review of the underlying enacting ordinance.
And with our code changing to this, as written in here, that would take away any way for a contract negotiation to happen with a future city administrator acting for that new contract, because it would be in conflict with our code?
Not necessarily, council. I would have to actually look at that and have to review that specific issue of council, because it does have plenary contracting authority for purposes of the city and does approve, for example, services contracts. That's a separate legal issue and a separate power than the mayor's executive authority selecting a subordinate officer in the first instance. And the council does, even with the proposed amendment to the MMC tonight, reserve for itself the authority to confirm the mayor's appointment, which kind of goes hand in glove with your other contracting power. So is there hopefully answer your question.
Yeah.
Are there any questions or discussion? Right, seeing none, go ahead and vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. Great. Next item on the agenda. All right, we're now on the final action. This is final action number 180-16172, award RFP and authorize mayor to sign contract for interim permanent city administrator search services. All right, and I represent on this one also. Okay, so as everybody's aware, our city administrator, Gene, is leaving the city of Lake Stevens, and we're going to miss you. We have begun the process of looking for a recruiting firm. We last week interviewed three respondents to the RFP that we sent out in November, and we appreciated the time that was spent with one firm out of Texas, one out of Oregon, and then also with Kaufman. We have decided to recommend that the council move to award the recruiting services contract to Kaufman, and I think that's it. Does staff want to have anything else you'd like to add to that?
Just that after we went through the interview process, it was clear that Kaufman was the one that had the most experience. They had appointed and they brought forward the most applicants, and hands down, their presentation was much better than the others that we had interviewed. In fact, one of the other proposals hadn't actually been put in a city administrator as of yet, so they were real great and real new. But clearly, the problem was the leader.
Right. If the council approves the recruiting services contract, then what I will be doing next is looking through the potential interim city administrators and then bring forward an interim city administrator for your consideration for appointment. In concert with that, probably we begin the process of looking for a permanent city administrator during that recruiting process. Does anybody have any questions?
So just some questions on the cost, because I have heard $25,000 to $30,000 for a search, and that's the $18,500 in here. So trying to get a sense of, is the $18,500 for the interim position?
The $18,500 is for the search services.
And, okay.
We would then be paying what we would have been paying Gene for the salary.
Okay.
Makes sense. So the city administrator salary and benefits, and then the hyphen for interim city administrator, it's $18,500 for conducting the city administrator recruitment. And then, as I said, it would just be paying the person the same wage that we would have been paying, the same cost that we would have been paying for Gene for the interim period of time.
So the
$18,500
is for the search for the interim?
No, the $18,500 is for the search for the permanent.
It's for the permanent?
Correct.
Okay. And what was the $30,000 that, or the $25,000 that you mentioned?
That was just off the cuff when we were talking about the other item. I mentioned when I said that the details are in the items later on the agenda. It's $18,500.
Okay. So, and then the cost for the interim person comes out of Gene's salary, and do we know what the cost is per hour for an interim position? Is it exactly a, I would think there'd be a markup with it, that's all.
It is a little more than what you're paying me currently, and Mary is here, representative from Kaufman, this evening, and she's able to field questions as well.
Mary, would you like to come forward and clarify that?
So what was your question again?
Just what the costs are per hour for an interim city administrator.
If you were to take the city administrator's current salary and benefits, it would wash. It would be a wash.
Okay.
So the person that's placed in the interim is paid a lower salary than what you're going to be paying because of the overhead that costs the company.
So what is it per hour? Do you have a number?
I do not. I don't know if we'll
what Mary said is what she said during the interview. It's the cost, all inclusive, that includes salary and benefits of our city administrator. What we would be paying for Jean over the course of January, February, whatever the case would be, is how much we would be paying. It's and that's what I was just clarifying with Jean, is that if Jean makes $50 an hour cash, that doesn't include his benefits. So that's where, as I'm understanding, Mary, again, correct me if I'm wrong, it's a wash in that it would be what we'd be paying for Jean's salary benefits, all inclusive, for the interim.
Absolutely.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the issue is the payout, too, so it's not quite a wash. We're, you know, because we have to pay out also, so there is a cost to that.
Right, but that's a function of getting departed.
Yeah. Okay. No, I understand
and
that.
The good news is that council has adopted a resolution that requires that we have money in place at least for the portion, a substantial portion of your payout, which we pay whether you're retired or went on to another job. Right? Yeah,
so what are next steps? So this is approving the contract with Kaufman, and then the next steps would be before an interim is hired, you would bring that back. Bring that back to us for approval.
Correct. So I requested that council consider holding open the 20th for a meeting.
Okay.
Because I'm not convinced that I'm going to be able to land on an interim before the end of this week to bring forward somebody on the 13th week from today. So if council approves the contract that I'm asking you to approve, then what I will do is I will review the interim city administrators that are proposed. I will then interview all of them or a couple of them. I will then bring forward a person for council's consideration to confirm, which is why we're looking at that fire ordinance, one of the reasons. So we will I'll bring that person forward to confirm for your consideration to confirm on the interim. That'll be right around probably the 20th of December. We are going through that interim process, Kaufman will begin doing the work for a recruitment for a permanent city administrator.
And what's the market like out there for a permanent? I know it took like Stevens a while. What do you think with the city of Monroe? I'm trying to get a sense of is this permanent search something that's going to be, you can never tell, but a year, 2 months?
I think the mayor wanted to move as fast as possible.
Yeah.
Like Stevens was a little bit different situation.
Yeah.
They had some of the things that took a little before they went out for the search.
Right.
So typically you're talking, you know, 2 to 3 months to pay
for a permanent position. Okay.
We were talking 60 days during the interview.
Yeah.
So you figure 60 to 90 days. This is, I don't want to be so hasty to just take the first person and end up with the wrong fit.
Sure.
So this is moving forward with the deliberation.
Well, first of all, so I'm in favor of doing a search for a permanent position. I think this is a great job and it's a great position. And we're going to miss Jean tremendously. There's an opportunity to bring in a really qualified candidate. I'm a little hesitant about approving an interim contract position for the cost and including the payout with Jean, and I know that some of it's coming out of next year, but especially if this time frame is 2 months or 30 days, is there another plan we can put in place for an interim versus hiring somebody outside to come into those hours? That's my question. When you bring back the contract and what that looks like, I'll probably have questions then.
A contract for?
For an interim, for you're going to bring back a candidate. For sounds like the procedure
yes,
is
that's
approving
right.
This contract is approving the search for permanent. You will be bringing back the interim position after you interview for appointment and confirmation, or is that not correct?
Yeah, the interim will come forward for your consideration
right.
of confirmation.
Right. Okay. And at that time, we'll have maybe a dollar amount, because right now it's a little
sure.
ambiguous of exactly what that dollar amount. We don't know, depending on the candidate and everything else, we don't know what that interim costs. But at the time you bring them back, that person will know the cost that threat. That would help.
I can tell you that the interim cost for the Stevens was to the city, I think it was $103 an hour.
Yeah.
And that included the BNO tax also.
Yeah.
and they had that position for a year. That interim did quite a long stint.
Yes.
Thank you.
Councilor Sherwood? With the discussion of an interim, is there any feelings about what Mr. Rodman had to say over here about looking within? Are we looking within, or are we strictly looking?
Anybody will be able to apply for the position. That includes anybody that works here.
The interim position?
I'm sorry. Thank you. For the permanent position, anybody can apply for it. I'm sorry. So the interim position, I'm looking outside the organization for an interim.
Understand. Is there any consideration for what Mr. Rodman had to say to that?
And I thought he was referencing permanent recruitment from within.
He's considered, you might have been referencing both.
He may have, in retrospect, yes. He may have been referencing both.
So my question is there any thought in the city about hiring for the interim with him?
I thought about it and decided to go for an interim from outside the city. And if you'd like to discuss the matter further, we can certainly move into another session. But I, you know, the one of the big points of consideration for me is, first, it could be 60 days, it could be 90 days, it could be 12 months, it could be 14 months. I would feel badly to have a director, because that would be the logical thing to do, move out of their department when there's a lot of work that our directors do. We have very hands-on directors. It would be, to me, a disservice to all the work we're trying to get down here to pull somebody to the city administrative position and take away that resource from all the other work we're trying to get down here to. And certainly, you know, again, I'm hoping for 60 to 90 days. If for some reason it ends up 12 months, it's one thing to kind of limp along, if you will, for 60 to 90 days. It's another if you're looking at 6 months or longer. And I would move forward with due deliberation to get it done as quickly as I can, but I don't want to be in such a end up with a long bed. We interviewed finance director applicants last week, and one of the things that I wanted to make certain was that this was going to be a fit, not just for us, but also for the candidate. I care a lot about the people who work here, and I want to make certain it works both ways.
Thank you.
Well, any other questions? All right. There's a motion on the floor. We'll go ahead and vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much, everyone. All right. The next item on the agenda is final action number 2. This is KB 16173.
Point of order. I'm sorry. Was there a motion on the floor? I don't believe that the motion or second was actually on the floor.
Well, somebody should make a motion. We're going to vote on it. So I am very sorry.
You are.
Thank you.
Mary, usually this doesn't happen. I'm caffeine this evening. All right. So I am looking for a motion. Is there a motion? All right. Councilor Rasmussen.
Let's see, move to award the executive search services RFP to Crofton, authorize the mayor to sign the contract with Crofton to provide the interim city administrator services and city administrator recruitment services for the city of Monroe, express and authorize further modifications to the contract as deemed necessary for the city.
Okay, the first from Councilmember Rasmussen, second from Councilmember Davis for the requested action on Agenda Bill 16-172. Discussion on the motion. Councilor Lucan.
So don't we already know the answers to the vote?
I
had a plan.
At least I'm not calling you Gamp or...
There you go. Right? You know,
All right. So let's go ahead and call. Did you actually have
a vote? I did.
Okay. That's okay. All right. We do have a motion for the requested action agenda 16-172. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 5-0. Okay, officially, thank you. Probably just thank you twice. All right, now we're going to move on to final action number two. This is the 16173 resolution number 0202016 for the fire department. Preliminary plat, plan residential development. This is 16KLR, CLTPR0001. And I suspect this is Mr. Asani.
I'm here, Mr. Fahey.
Council, would you like me to do the appearance and appearance disclosure process for us?
Yes. Thank you.
Council, as the city is aware from previous closing proceedings, the approval of a preliminary plat and PRD is a cross-judicial matter and is therefore subject to appearance and appearance document under Washington law. Council is familiar with the series of questions that I'll be asking and the interest of the expediency. I would assume that all council members will have a negative and non-response to each answer if no one says anything different. The first question that I will ask you deal with the issue of interest. Does any council member have a financial interest in the project or the underlying property? Does any council member have a family member who is a party of record? Does any council member have a personal or familial employment or other business relationship with a party of record? Does any council member own property within 500 feet of the project site? Is any council member aware of any other personal interests or involvement with the project, the parties of record, or the property that should fairly be disclosed? Please let the record show that there were no affirmative responses to any of those questions. The second series of inquiries concern the impartiality of council members. Is any council member aware of any personal bias for or against any party or for or against the project? Has any council member prejudged any of the issues? Has any council member not reviewed the Russian materials for the project? Is any council member aware of any reason he or she would not be able to perform visitor duties in an objective, impartial, and fair manner? Again, the record shows all negative responses from the council. The final series of questions have to do with ex parte communications. Has any council member had any ex parte communications regarding this project, both over and pending before the council? Thank you, Mr. Mayor, for that. You also show a negative response to all those questions as well. So that concludes the appearance fair disclosure process.
Thank you very much, Mr. Hope. All right, Mr. Osaki, please keep it.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Resolution 2016 would have passed. Adopt the hearing examiner's recommendations and conditions of approval for a flat plan residential development, commonly known as Clyde Parmenter. This is an 88-lot flat. It's on about 27 acres. It's in the R4 zoning district. The property is located in the northeast corner of the city. In fact, the east property line abuts the city limits. The north property line is also the city limits. And the only access proposed to this particular property is off of Chain Link Road. The hearing examiner held a public hearing on October 20th. Issued a recommendation as part of the packet, and I just want to note a couple of items related to public comment on the plat that is in the record and in the hearing examiner's recommendation. There was a property owner to the south of the plat that shares a common property line with this proposed plat PRD, and she indicated she would want a fence to prevent trespass from residents of the plat going onto her property. The hearing examiner chose not to include that as a condition of approval, and part of the reason is he found no particular item related to this plat that might merit greater potential impacts of trespass than any other plat that he's reviewed in the past. And the other part is that the code requires between the lots in a plat and an abutting property, so on the perimeter, a 10-foot landscape strip. So the hearing examiner felt that that 10-foot landscape strip between the lots and the abutting properties would be sufficient to prevent trespass on the joint property. Another comment that was part of the record on this particular flat and PRD, I had to deal with a resident who's lived off of Chain Lake Road for approximately 46 years, and his comment had to deal with speeding and traffic on Chain Lake Road. He felt that this particular proposal in conjunction with other development in that particular area was raising some safety concerns along Chain Lake Road, especially regarding speeding. And he suggested that the speed limit be reduced from 35 miles an hour to 25 miles per hour. And the hearing examiner's response to that is basically that he does not have the authority to change the speed limit, it's only because the city has to do it. So the requested action is to approve Resolution 2016, which again approves the by a permitter, preliminary plat plan, residential development, subject to conditions of approval. And I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Councilmember Quinlan.
The 10-foot, did you say 10-foot landscape strip?
Right.
So you mean 10-foot high or 10-foot wide?
10-foot wide, and with landscaping within it.
Okay, and it doesn't designate what that landscaping is? I mean, is it a hedge, is it...
It's not, it would be typically it would be some combination of shrubs and trees, but that ultimately gets reviewed by the Parks Department, the landscape specialist in the Parks Department.
Okay.
It's intended to be a barrier, some site shrub barrier.
Okay. And the person who complained about that, who requested that fence, did they have any comments based on, did they know that the landscape, the 10-feet landscape strip was the solution? I mean, do they get notice of this in the hearing examiner?
Yes, they get the copy of the decision.
Okay.
I don't want to go too far. I've had conversations off the record, so they get a copy of the decision.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, Council? Is there a motion?
I'll do it. I moved to authorize the mayor to sign in. Wait a minute.
Just pick one.
At this point.
Want me to read this?
Yes, please.
Okay, Councilmember Quinlan.
I move to approve resolution number 020-2016, adopting the hearing examiner's findings of fact, conclusions of law, recommendations, and conditions of approval of the preliminary plat / planned residential development 16 PLPR-001- Clyre Parmenter.
Second.
Okay. That was first from Councilmember Camp, second from Councilmember Davis for the requested action as printed in Agenda Bill 1617 for April day. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you. All right. The next item on the agenda this evening is final action number 3. This is AB 1617-4, authorized mayor to sign addendum number 1 to lobbyist agreement. This is Mr. Basil. Mr. Basil.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. The city entered into a contract with Greenlight Strategies last year on December 15th, if I'm not mistaken. That was for a one-year period with up to two mutually agreed upon extensions. I understand that there was discussion last week on this, and Council agreed to do a one-year extension this time. Staff put together with the city attorney a first addendum to that contract for you this evening for consideration.
Thank you. Councilmember
Cutter. I wanted to thank you for putting in the comments, and these were comments I made to have the weekly legislative reports be more Monroe-centric, and then to have some KPIs or performance measures that the legislative committee would come up with so we can kind of gauge the success of the contract with some more metrics. So I appreciate that. So in the spirit of that, I'm going to stick myself out again and make a motion. Move to authorize the mayor to sign addendum number 1 to the consultant agreement with Greenlight Strategies, Inc. for state lobbyist public affairs representative services and expressly authorize any further minor revisions deemed necessary or appropriate. Do I have a second?
Second.
Yeah, the first is Councilmember Cutback and second from Councilmember Camp. Any discussion on the motion? Councilmember Clark.
Is this part of anybody who needs to use a conflict of interest having Chadman representing us as a lobbyist in Olympia when we are in litigation with Heritage Baptist Church about an issue with the city?
Mr. Well, as an attorney, is there any conflict of interest?
I'm not aware of any conflict. I mean, legally cognizable conflict of interest on
Councilman Serber?
Yeah.
Okay. Councilman McCaffrey, wish are there any, is there any other discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-1. Councilmember Scarborough are voting against. Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda is final action number 4. This is AD 16175, 2017 Lodging Tax Advisory Committee Grant Awards. And I am the presenter for this, for someone to pull this up over. Okay, so the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee met a couple weeks ago. We had received the applications that are shown there for our consideration. There was an application for a destination brochure from the City of Monroe Parks Department for $3,000. The city frequently applies for funding for the brochure that you get every year. This is a summer brochure with all the events and activities in it. And so the committee is recommending approval of the $3,000. The City of Monroe Parks Department also applied for $4,000 for the Super Boats Wakeboard Tour. After submitting the application and it already going into the process for the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee, it was, we were made aware of the fact that the Super Boats Wakeboard Tour will be occurring somewhere else this year. The primary sponsor, Supra, would like to get, would like to have the Wakeboard Tour done in different locations so that it's not just Monroe that gets to see their boats every year, because that's one of the reasons why they sponsor this, is to sell boats. So they're going to be going to another location this year, and as a result, the request for $4,000 was pulled. The Parks Department also applied for $5,000 for USA Triathlon operations, and the committee recommends approval of that. The Evergreen Speedway this last year attracted a Red Bull Global Rallycross, where they brought in dirt and had a race there with a jump and Subarus and other rally cars jumping and racing. And so to get more people to come, and it was a pretty successful event already, the Evergreen Speedway requested $5,000 from the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee to come to this multiple day event, and the committee is recommending approval. The Monroe Chamber of Commerce made a request for just over $61,000 for tourism marketing, and the committee is recommending approval of that. The Monroe Historical Society made a request for sign design and installation in the amount of $2,184, so just over $2,000. And this would be a new sign that would be right under the museum front door. There was some discussion in the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee about the idea that the money's for heads and beds. That's a misnomer. It's not just for heads and beds. It's to help promote what Monroe has to offer when people get here. It can be used for capital improvements, like a sign for a, you know, for a nonprofit that might draw people into our downtown, the Historical Society, and so that is recommended for funding. And all the committee recommendation is to award everything that's listed there for the total amount of just over $76,000. However, there was also recognition that over the last few years we've been generating higher revenue than what the ask has been. The ending fund balance, if we only stuck with $76,800, would be something over $100,000. Do I have that correct, Brad?
Correct.
And so the thought process there was to go ahead and do two rounds next year, which is why the budget, and that wasn't amended, that wasn't material this evening, I did see that, that we add another, I think it was $20,000 or so to the budget for the Lodging Tax Advisory Committee, and go ahead and run two application periods next year, one in the late winter, so we've already scheduled a meeting for mid to late January, and then the other one occurring at the same time that we do every year. So the first one would be sort of a smaller application round, right around $20,000, and then the second round would be right around the $80,000 number. I don't have all the numbers in front of me, so these are ballpark numbers from what I recall giving the presentation to right now. So that's what the recommendation is, and that's the center of my briefing. Any questions? Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Two things. First, just to reopen the 5,000 for the parks for the triathlon. That's partnership. The Monroe Tractor, they once again asked me to be their volunteer coordinator. It's a volunteer position. I said yes, but for this, it's directed towards the Parks Department. Didn't say anything with it, so. But just want to be upfront and out there with that. So, other than that, I like the recommendations and enjoy supporting what's there. So, I'll make a motion to approve the lodging tax advisory committee recommendations for the 2017 lodging tax grants as presented.
Second. Thank you. I have the first from Councilmember Rasmussen for the request of action that's an agenda bill number 16175. And as typed, and a second from Councilmember Davis. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much, everybody. Right, we are done with final action. We are now moving to Councilmember reports. Please note that we do have executive session this evening. So, Councilmember reports. Do we have a report from Community Transit this evening?
No, as an alternate, I was not needed last week and I did not report for sure.
Okay, sounds good. Let's go ahead and move on to Councilmember Cannon.
Oh, okay. I'm just curious, are there any December 7th activities in town? Can you describe?
No. We do have the flag staff, which is what Mike was just waving at me. But no, there are no other activities that I'm aware of here in town for Arbor Day.
Yeah, that's it. Light up and roll on Saturday was really good. I'm sure we can see more than that. It's great to see a few of the council members there. And I spoke with Councilmember Scarborough, and we are going to cancel the legislative committee next week. And I guess we have a 6:30.
Yes, we have a 6:30 reception for our boards and committee members. Okay. I think Brian will have an interesting meeting with you guys to talk about lobbying efforts. Is there a lack of a quorum, or should we add him to the agenda next week during council? Or?
We'll see. That's right.
Okay. We'll give that in to the agenda. So we'll go ahead and we'll invite Mr. Wall to come to the council to have a conversation about the one of the big things that we're working on right now is how to approach that into the next legislative cycle.
Okay.
Anything further?
No.
So we'll add that to the agenda. Councilor Davis?
I love that Christmas tree. That was fun the other night. It is
getting better.
And I had a quick question about the lighting that we were trying to do. Do you have any idea of how that's going for that thing?
Yeah, so they didn't get the grant. And so, as a result, and that's one of the reasons why you saw that put into the budget this evening for next year. Is that a good summary? That was a question.
All right.
Thank you. Councilor Rasmussen.
Thank you. A couple things. First, sad to hear the passing of middle school district board member Jim Scott. Very sad. Very sad. Jim wasn't able to make it to the service, but I thought served the families. And, I interacted a lot with Mr. Scott as a under my wearing my Board of Health Act and the challenges that him and the other board members in the rest of the school district or tackled with Scott Elliott. Is the one board member that continues to reach out to me and seeking ideas and looking out for it. A lot of great interactions with that guy. Definitely be nice. Since we met last time, I've actually attended a couple of leadership Snohomish County meetings. One just last week in the county offices, and it was Government Affairs Day, and basically doing what we do every week, but at the county level. It was actually kind of fun to in a role that I'm used to, but also be talk to the classmate or my peers about it. Participants, like, how were the class before? It was very, very interesting and very powerful. It was race and quality and inclusiveness. And, you know, the big takeaway for me from that class, and with every class I take, I always think back and relate it to personal, professional, political lives. And that one class talked a lot about taking the barriers down. We want to help people in our communities. We need to be able to eliminate the barriers. And I think about what this council has done over the last year and taken down a lot of barriers to help our community. You know, the housing, hope the space in the
Lemark Family Village.
Yes. Helping them out. Working with community transit to keep our bus stops near the library and senior center. The downtown businesses that we've worked with on permanent fees and so forth like that. And that's a prime example of just how coming together and tearing down the barriers or breaking them down so that they're manageable is going to build a positive community. And we are certainly sharing examples of doing that. So, I had to get that out there because, after a couple days of reflecting, actually I had to call our director from Lancashire Sonoma County and just brag about what we've been doing and how it's really relating to these classes. So, other than that, last thing is Light of Monroe. That was an awesome treat. Great to see everyone out there. It was cold. Unfortunately, no snow, but it was not raining, so that's a good thing.
Thank you.
Councilor, we're coming back. Yeah, I'm starting to miss the light up in Rome. My son had a quarterfinal state poker, but they lost, so it's unfortunate, but they had studied the game. The email that was sent out about December 20th, I am probably not able to make that meeting for that possible meeting, and that also will be gone January 10th.
Councilor Scarborough.
Gene, the improvements behind ours on Oak Street. One, the cleaning up of the north side of the street, putting up the no parking blocks. Is that something the city encouraged the owner to do and they did it?
I'm actually going to defer to Brad. Maybe he's got insight.
That immediately north of the pavement is an unincorporated Snohomish County, and that was done by a property owner of unincorporated Snohomish County as their own volition because they're building a house there.
Well, those are cleaned up a lot. Second, behind the dollar store, where all the bales of cardboard art, I noticed that they finally picked up the one and sold it and scattered on one lot. Do you have anything to do with pushing to get that cleaned up? Who did that on their own? The dollar?
That's going to be either the owner of the business or the owner of the property.
Well, it looks better. There's still some to be done, but it looks a lot better than that. As far as Mr. Scott, I'm understanding that there is a service or a memorial on the 18th of December at the high school fountain. I believe it's at 3 o'clock. I can check on that, but that's kind of what I heard. I have some ideas on what we might do to fix the issue that the gentleman brought tonight. About the fact about how to get the longer vehicles off or out of the little fairway of Main Street. We'll take our time to discuss that. Talk to Fred or you or whoever, how we want to get that fixed. That's all I've got.
Thank you very much.
Good.
So, staff,
Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Carroll?
Thank you, Mayor, Council. Event, we have a new event coming on Saturday, December 17th at Lake Tai Park. It's called the Rerun, and it's a 5K, 10K half marathon. And what it is, it's a follow-up event. There was a, to the Summer Beats run that was held in the park there in August. So it's a new event. See how it goes in December. In addition to the governor's direction that the flags in the state of Washington facilities be lowered to half mast or half staff for in remembrance of Pearl Harbor Day. Also this Friday, December 9th, the flags at all state agencies and also at our, in the city here will be lowered to half staff in memory of Officer Gutierrez, who was killed in the line of duty on Wednesday, November 30th. So just want you to be aware of that. And that's about it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Nelson?
Nothing tonight.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Sutton?
Only thing is that if all goes well, Carl's Jr. will be open next Monday. If all goes well. I don't know if they're having a grand opening or not. That's their target date.
Mr. Cowherd?
Nothing tonight.
Chief?
The funeral for the Tacoma officer will be at 1 o'clock Friday afternoon at the Tacoma Dome, and the public is invited. That's all.
Thank you. Mr. Russell?
I'm not here.
The way this week is in the packets. That's what I'm starting.
Chief, did you get the email from Jennifer Carroll on the concerns of the homeless trash and how Boiling Park is underneath the bridge, etc.? Did you get that?
No, I didn't.
Did all the council members get it? Mm-hmm. A few days ago, because I answered her, which I thought you answered her too.
Yeah, that is good. My email. I'm trying to remember if I forwarded it to you or not. Usually I forward those to you, so I haven't missed it or the name of the anonymous.
Jennifer Carroll. She's also the lady who lives behind Fisher and brought to our attention the problem that some of the stack on his pocket went up all the cold fence across the alley and back up.
Okay. I will look at that and forward that to the chief. Okay, anything else? All right. For me, and I'll just make it quick, I'm going to speak to some packets. I, a couple highlights from last week. We interviewed the recruiting firms. That's what I got a motion for you this evening. We also interviewed finance director applicants and are re-interviewing one of those applicants Thursday morning. And then I met with Senator Pearson on Thursday afternoon to talk about legislative priorities and 522. I am having a meeting next week with County Councilmember Lowe and Senator-elect Palumbo to talk about 522, and I've got some other meetings going on also. So anyway, I think that's all I have, and let's go ahead and go over the agenda for next week and the extended agenda, and we'll start to send down the next session.
Thank you, Mayor. Agenda December 13th. Special note, the meeting starts at 6:30, and that's in regards to an report and commission recognition attend. Under announcements and presentations, we have confirmation of board commission reappointments. State Auditor's Office will be here for the exit conference. And we're going to try to get community strategies here as well. The set agenda, unfinished business, discussed by 22, options for the time. We have ordinance amending term limits, final reading.
It's removed.
That's removed.
I was just reading like good boy, sorry. Your short timer attitude. I know.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Okay, so final action two. Ordinance adopted 2017 budget, final reading. Final action number three. Ordinance amending 2016 budget, final reading. Number four. Ordinance amending MC, chronic nuisances, final reading. Final action five. Ordinance amending MMC, city administrator appointment. Final action number six. Resolution amending fee schedule 2017. And we have the tentative legislative affairs meeting, which we're actually going to have green light go to council, so that's off. Snohomish County tomorrow. And this is another show. Conditions, resolutions.
Just council's okay with this. We have a really long agenda this evening, and we've got another long one we can do on the rule says. Are there any items under final action that you would be okay with moving consent? One that comes to mind is the chronic nuisances one, final action number four. Does anybody have any objection to moving that under consent?
No.
Okay. Do you want to move the final action number five, which is the city administrator? That's the ordinance. Any objection to moving that under consent?
No.
Everything else, I think, can stay under final action. Does anybody have anything else to move from final action to consent?
Well, no.
Thank you. Okay. Let's go over the extended agenda. Go ahead. Looking at this, we have December 20th. I do not anticipate having somebody ready for appointment as early as next week. So I would like to keep the meeting on the 20th, if that's okay with everybody. Councilor Camp?
I'm just wondering about this. December 27th, the 5th, Tuesdays.
It's not a 5th. It's the 4th.
Sorry?
It's the 4th Tuesday, the 27th.
Oh, we have the 13th twice, okay. Yeah.
You're counting problems too. Okay, so I don't see the need for the meeting on December 27th. If we're going to cancel that, I would like to do that by December 13th. And then, as far as, and the same thing with January 3rd, we'll have staff that a number of folks will like to take vacation that week, and so it makes sense to cancel January 3rd. We can certainly wait until the 13th to do those, but that's kind of where my head is right now, so cancel those two meetings. So, Councilmember Kavak, you don't want to be here for the 20th. Is anybody else not able to be here for the 20th? Councilmember Rasmussen?
I may be late.
Okay.
An hour, I'm sorry, is that?
Half hour.
It may not last a half hour.
Do you have any other items for the 20th? Or is it just the end? So right now we're going to have the 20th, and I'll see what I can do to try to take care of things on the 13th. So, alright? Okay. I don't think anything else we said on the agenda. Let's go ahead and have a meeting now for executive session. We've got potential litigation, person or civility 42.0.110, subsection 1, subsection 5, land acquisition, that's 42.30.110, subsection 1, subsection 2. The total amount of time for these two will start off at 15 minutes. We do not anticipate having a separate. We're back out of executive session, and that sounds really loud. We are coming up on 10 o'clock for us to continue by our rules of procedure. I need a motion to extend so that we can go back into executive session. Is there a motion to extend?
So moved.
We have a motion to extend from Councilmember Scarborough. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. We have a first, we have a second. All those in favor of extending past 10, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-1 with Councilmember Camp voting against extending past 10. We're now going to go into executive session for approximately 5 minutes and with action potentially to occur, simply to adjourn. Okay, we're back in session.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, I have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Scarborough, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Thank you very much. Have a great evening, everybody.